This is the NCARB podcast, where you get an inside look at licensure, regulation, and the initiatives shaping the future of architectural practice. I'm your host, Andy McIntyre, Vice President of Marketing and Communications at NCARB. And this season, we're diving into Pathways to Practice, NCARB's multi-year effort to rethink how architects become licensed.
Architecture is the hardware to the software of life, right? It is fundamentally about that interaction, and it makes life easier if we have a built environment that works.
Across 8 episodes, we'll explore how licensure got to where it is today and where it needs to go next. We talk with architects, educators, regulators, and NCARB leaders about education, experience, and the exam, and why each of those pillars is evolving.
And that portion of school where you go from conceptual to real is also really challenging. It's not something you're really gently moved into. It's kind of like you're doing something that's flowy and crazy, and all of a sudden, wait, you actually have to make this work.
You'll hear how the NCARB competency standard was developed, how research is shaping future licensure models, and what a more flexible, competency-based approach could mean for candidates from a wide range of backgrounds.
So we've seen that in our data as the number of reciprocal licenses starts to decrease a little bit, but that number of individuals who are licensed holds steady.
We also tackle the big questions. Why does licensure look the way it does today? Where do candidates face the biggest barriers? And how can we expand access without lowering standards?
Not everybody fits into the same mold. And so having different pathways to licensure, I think, is really important.
Whether you're a licensure candidate, an educator, a firm leader, or a regulator, this season offers clarity, context, and transparency into one of the most important conversations facing the profession.
Does this requirement to complete all divisions of the exam place an unfair burden on any one group or other?
This is Pathways to Practice, only on the NCARB podcast. Please follow the link in the show notes, subscribe now, and join us as we explore the future of architectural licensure.
My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Today, I am welcoming back a friend of the show, David Jennings. David is an entrepreneur, best-selling author, and the founder of Systemology, where he helps business owners free themselves from daily operations and build businesses that run without them. That sounds nice, right? You might remember David from episode 461, where we talked about his first book, Systemology, and he's back today to share insights from his brand new book, Systems Champion, a practical guide to empowering your team to take ownership, simplify your business processes, and unlock true freedom. David Jennings, welcome back to Entree Architect Podcast.
Hey, Mark, it's a pleasure to be back. The years fly by.
It is amazing how fast time flies. It feels like yesterday that we talked about Systemology in our last episode.
Yeah, it feels like we added a little pandemic in the middle and a few years just disappeared.
Exactly right. The world's completely different today than it once was.
Yes.
So let's talk about origin story. I know you talked to your origin story last time, but it's been a while. So go back as far as you want to go back. Share, when did you discover your passion for what you do? Maybe even who or what inspired you to get started?
I think it must have come from my dad. He was a systems engineer, and I remember the first system he created was for my brother and I to do chores around the house. So maybe that early programming influenced me, because the businesses that I got involved in after that all had some element of systems and processes. We had a rock and roll clothing music store that we systemized and then franchised. We actually modeled it off Hot Topic out of the States, brought that here to Australia. Mm-hmm. And then interested in the stock market education space, which was all about trading systems and having a set of rules to follow. And then it was my last business where, for some reason, I got trapped in that business. And I thought, oh, this business is different. It depended on me. It was a digital agency. I was learning all of the info, staying on the cutting edge, and I became the knight in shining armor for that business. And it just became more like a prison than it was anything else. I was trapped. Unless I was there, the business wasn't making money. And it wasn't until I found out we were pregnant where I just thought, things have got to change. I don't want to be that business owner who's trapped, who's spending 80-hour work weeks when I should be spending some family time. So that's when I started to make a real change. And I went on the journey to remove myself from the operations, taking a lot of the learnings that I had from earlier businesses. But for some reason, again, I thought, oh, this business is different. And I systemized, documented a lot of what we've done, got myself out of the day-to-day, put an operations manager in. She ran that business for a good few years till we ended up selling it. And that's really when I discovered my passion, which is to help business owners get off the tools, out of operations, and get a bit more freedom to choose how they work. Sometimes it's not even about not working. It's just having the freedom of choice on what and how and where you want to work. And that really set me on my journey for systemology. And I've been on this mission now for close to 10 years, really understanding what it takes to get someone to build a business that isn't dependent on them.
When you systematized yourself out of that business, is what it sounds like, what did that process teach you about that process, about leadership and letting go?
One of the big insights was that a lot of business owners, and myself included, when you're trained on doing the thing, delivering that core product or service, that's what you use to get the business up and running and off the ground. But then also that is what ends up trapping you, because it's too easy to fall back into old habits and patterns and just go, oh yes, I'll do it. I'll help that client out. I'll solve that problem and be involved in everything. And the digital agency, we ended up branching out and having a video production business, which was like a sister business in that business. And I'm not a video guy. I can't turn a camera on. I don't know how to edit in Final Cut. I don't know any of that. And that was where I learned probably some of my biggest insights, was growing that business where I couldn't do any of the thing. And that's when I said, oh, can't I just take a lot of these lessons and bring them over to the other part of the business? And that set off the chain reaction.
Yeah. Architects, I mean, we're talking to thousands of architects right now, mostly small firm entrepreneurial architects who are running their own firms. They hear me for the last decade talking about systems. You have to have systems. You have to have systems, right? It's the key, right? It's the thing that's going to help you be more successful. And a lot of them, they just don't know how to do it. What are the things that get in the way of building those systems? Why do we see that it might be a problem, or why do we resist it so much?
There's lots of reasons. Some of the core ones being that the business owner often doesn't have a picture in their head of what the business could look like running without them. Like a lot of architects, all they know is a business where they are the architect,
right,
and they're doing the work for the client. And it's very hard to build something if you don't have the picture of it. And their entire identity is built to this idea of, I'm an architect that's doing this particular design work, not necessarily I'm the business owner of an architectural business, which is different. And there's different roles and different tasks. And I mean, the business owner just needs to make a choice how they want to work and what it is that they're looking to build. But part of it, a lot of architects also are very particular by nature. Like that's how they get great at what they do. And that can cause a lot of micromanagement and overreach, and makes it hard for them to let go of certain tasks because they want things to be done to a particular standard. Not only that, a lot of architects, they also don't know where to start. It's kind of like, well, what are the first few systems? And oh, every design project we do is different. Like every new design, and how can I systemize something that's so custom and bespoke? So
right,
there are these just natural things that almost seem compounded for architects in particular.
Yeah. Episode 461, we talked about systemology. Can you just give us a brief overview? I highly recommend that you go back and listen to 461. But David, could you give us a little bit of an overview of what systemology is and maybe even how it evolved into the new book and what the new book is about?
So the original book was written for the business owner, systemology. I wrote it as a system to systemize a business. And it answers the question, where do you get started? What are the first few systems you should document? How do you get those systems out of the heads of the team members? Where do you organize that information? How do you get the team on board to want to follow the process and build a systems culture? What systems are required for scale? And the last one stage in the process is we talk about optimization and re-engineering process. How do we make it even better? So it's seven steps that I take someone through. And one of the things I mentioned in the first book was this idea of the systems champion. It's the team member that helps the business owner roll out systems thinking in the organization. And it was a small piece of the first book. And then having worked with many hundreds of businesses directly after the launch of the book and thousands indirectly, this common element kept on popping up. It's the fact that the business owner is typically not the best person to be doing the systemization or the documentation. They've got a lot of other things that are competing for their attention and have higher priority. And systemization is important. So it's easy to always be on the to-do list. It's important, but it's very, very rarely urgent.
Right.
So that's why it never gets done by the busy person. And I looked at a lot of the common successful businesses that we've worked with to go, what is the common attribute or characteristics? And this systems champion came up again and again and again. And it was a person who constantly was chipping away at it and moving it forward and getting it closer. And probably one of the biggest changes happened, it would have been early 2023 when ChatGPT came out, and it just accelerated the ability to create the SOPs and the documentation. I mean, we can take transcripts, load it into ChatGPT, and have it turn into a process. And what that did was it made that role so much more accessible to every design studio, because rather than needing some high-end consultant, Six Sigma, lean process person to come in that, you know, probably wants $150,000 or whatever it might be for the position, using these tools and the right guidance, the systems champion role is actually quite accessible to a junior now. And that's been quite the game changer and really spawned the next book, which I wrote for the team member, the systems champion who helps the business owner do this, as their guidebook to say, the business owner struggles with this. They need your help. This is incredibly important. You've got all these tools at your disposal, and it's so critical right now with everything we're seeing with AI and how the small business landscape is changing.
So the systems champion is a role in your business. As you were describing the business owner and not having the time and having too many things, I could just feel the listeners leaning in and nodding. Yes, that is me. That is me. And then you started talking about this person, this role that can use tools and technology to do those things that we've been struggling with doing all these years. And so I could definitely feel the listeners listening. So can you talk a little bit more about that systems champion, who that should be? Who should we be looking for? Is that somebody who's already in our firm, or is it somebody that we should be looking outside and bringing them in?
I've seen systems champions of all sorts and sizes. I've seen part-time, full-time, return to work, mum or dads, juniors, offshore assistants. So they can all work. And oftentimes the first systems champion might not be the last systems champion you have. You can plug new people into this role. The one that I think is most effective and the one that has worked consistently is the junior team member. Almost think of the systems champion role like an apprentice role. It's the junior architect that has gone through design school. They understand that part of the business. They're trying to come into the industry. They're young, they're hungry, they're curious, they're comfortable with new technology and discovering things and learning. And it becomes almost like a mentor-mentee relationship and role where you'll have that team member meet with the most knowledgeable team members in your firm and find out how they do what they do, record them doing tasks, using AI to accelerate the documentation, organizing all of that knowledge into a central location. And it's an extraordinary gift to give this junior because they're going to learn the art of the business. It's not.
Yes.
It's oftentimes what's missed at school, and you're programming them right up front. And for the right person who's a self-starter, who has leadership potential as well, like if you spot the right person, they can evolve and may even move into becoming your operations manager or that right-hand man or woman over time because they get enormous visibility across the organization. And they help you to solve a problem that you know needs to be solved, that most business owners, a lot of business owners never actually end up solving it because they're not wired to do it and they're too busy.
Right.
And this makes it happen.
Yeah. As you were describing that junior person, I was thinking what a great opportunity for that person, right? Because before this role that you're describing, the junior person comes in and they just do all the dirty work, the stuff that nobody else wants to do. But this is such an important role. And so they are very quickly elevated and they're, as you described, exposed to all these different parts of the business, the design side, as well as the business side that they wouldn't otherwise have the opportunity to be involved with. And I could definitely see how they could very quickly elevate through the firm because now they know so much about all the different pieces of the business and they are the expert in the systems that they helped develop. So it becomes this really great opportunity for them.
And as far as what we're seeing change-wise, like there could not be a better time to do this than right now because what we're finding is the companies that are winning with AI are the companies that are very clear on process because AI can do so much. It becomes a little bit overwhelming for a lot of business owners on where do I start? What can it do? What should I get it to do for my business? And oftentimes they're chasing shiny objects. Whereas if you get very clear on what your process is, it's much easier then to ask the question, what are we already doing? And how does AI help us do that faster, cheaper, and better? So I've got some standout clients that are absolutely crushing it with their AI adoption because they're systematically going through all of their processes and re-engineering them. Mm. So I think from a timing perspective, there's never been a more important time to get this done. And unfortunately, it's also never been easier. And that systems champion very quickly evolves into an AI champion because they just understand how the business works from a systems perspective.
Can you maybe share a case study or a story from the book of a company that maybe was struggling with their systems and then went through the process that you described and succeeded?
Yeah. One of the ones, because I think it ties in with the AI story, is an accountant. She's here on the Mornington Peninsula in Melbourne, Australia, and she has an account like practice with 20 accountants. She's always been systems minded and systems focused because her first job was at McDonald's. So the practice, she started documenting things from the early days.
One of the best places in the world to learn systems.
That's right. And her systems champion ended up being her son, Ryan. And I've seen this quite a few times. It doesn't always line up, but I talked about that mentor-mentee. Sometimes if it's a family member, that can work well, particularly I've seen that in a few businesses. But Ryan went through and documented many parts of the business. And when AI hit, they then started cherry-picking some of the best processes. There was one process that used to take about 1,000 hours over the course of the year. It was logging into our tax portal, scanning for updates, reviewing them, determining what was important, putting it into an email and sending it off to the client. And they do this for every client every single week for the entire year. And they had it very well documented and it was offshored. By re-engineering the process and building like a little robot that uses AI to scrape the data and put it all together, they were able to take that task from 1,000 hours down to 8 hours. And It was a case of just a human in the loop. All the AI would do the back end stuff. It would draft up the emails and then the accountants would just give it a quick once over before they hit send. And she's been able to stack many dozens of those tasks inside an organization, which basically frees up the accountant's time. And she's finding that what it does is it hasn't reduced her headcount or she hasn't used it for that. It's just meant that they can take on a lot more clients and increased capacity and offer significantly better service because now the accountant has the space to think more about the client and hop on the phone and chat with them and build up the relationship bit, which is the bit the AI can't do. So it's been an absolute game changer for her. But there's so many different stories, everything from business owners taking their first holiday to, I had another client that ended up exiting. They sold their business to Petstock. They owned a doggy daycare center and they sold it to a listed company here in Australia and she got a fantastic exit just by going through this journey of documentation, which increases the value, which removes key person dependency. And that obviously is a lot more attractive should you come to the point where you want to exit also.
Yeah, for sure. Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. Gain lessons learned and credits earned with Arcademy, RCAT's continuing education program. Listen to popular episodes of the Detailed podcast and earn AIA-approved HSW credits. Yes, you heard that right, HSW credits for episodes of Detailed podcast. Listen to an episode, check out the learning objectives, and use what you've learned while listening to take the course. The program is free, it's simple, and can be found at rcat.com under the Resources tab. Or just go to rcat.com/arcademy. That's ARCAT.com/ARCATEMY. That's ARCAT.com/Arcademy. Please visit our sponsors today and thank them. Thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. Can we talk a process a little bit? If a architect business owner's listening and they want to execute on this idea, where do they start? Do they start by doing any sort of organizing and preparing, or do they just go right out and find that champion and give them the book and let them read the book?
Yes.
What's the process look like? Like, what should they do first? And then what is the process after they start look like?
Yeah. So depending on where the architect is up to in their head, because the architect needs to first go, yes, I want this. Now, if you're still on the edge and you haven't quite figured it out, or you need to understand a little bit more, then I'd say, we'll start with the book Systemology, because that will give you a good picture of high level, the steps that need to be done.
Yeah.
If you already intuitively know and you say, I just want to do this and I want to get moving, then the best thing that you can do is find that person, give them a copy of the book. And we just start off by mapping the linear journey that your prospect and client goes through when we deliver your core service. We think about, how do we grab their attention? How do we handle that incoming call? What does the sales process look like? How do we onboard and how do we collect money and how do we deliver? We just start high level to start with, but by mapping that journey and then asking where in this process is the pain, that's often the starting point. Hmm. The architect might go, oh, I don't have enough leads. Or they might say, oh, the sales process is challenging, or, oh, it's the delivery. Depending on where the pain is most, we tend to lean into that first. And again, we guide the systems champion, depending on where the business owner's at and what sort of support they need. getting the systems champion, focusing in on that pain point. And sometimes it's just about capturing what you're currently doing. You don't even need to re-engineer it or bring AI into it or anything like that just yet. Just go, well, this is the checklist that we follow whenever a new person comes on board. That, for a lot of businesses, can create tremendous wins.
Yeah, I can imagine hiring a junior staff person, making them the systems champion, and then just having them follow you around.
Yes.
Right? Just documenting every step that you're making, right? Maybe even recording video of everything that you're doing, and then documenting the process that you completed your work doing. That would be a very interesting way to approach it, for sure.
So it could be little Zoom meetings where you hop on a Zoom when you're about to do a quote for a client, you record it, and then you share the recording with the team member, the systems champion, so they can begin the process. It's really about capturing what you're currently doing. That's the easiest way to do it. And when that's then documented in a location, then what we start to do is we're able to remove the excuse that a lot of team members have, which is, oh, but I didn't know. Like, I mean, that's the biggest get out of jail free card. Oh, right. I didn't know that we were meant to follow up that invoice with the client if we haven't heard from them in 30 days. Whereas if you've got a documented process, you just go, well, here's how we do things here. Here's the 10 point checklist. You didn't follow point number 7. Like, it's so much easier to manage someone, especially for architects who are very particular about having things done a certain way. This is the way that you build confidence to let go and delegate and hand off tasks, is by having clear expectations and spelling it out so there's no confusion and removing the, oh, but I didn't know excuse.
Yeah, I think accountability is a big part of the success of the system, right? You can build all the systems you want, but if your team isn't using them, then they're not very useful. Can you talk a little bit more about accountability and and how do you inspire your team to want to use them rather than, you know, try to avoid them?
So in the book, we talk about the job of the systems champion is to actually remove excuses. And there are three main excuses. There's the, I didn't know how. There's the, I didn't know it was my responsibility, as in I didn't know it was expected of me. And then I didn't want to. So the first one is that I don't know how. We handled that by the documentation. I didn't know it was expected of me speaks to what you're talking around the accountability and transparency.
Yeah.
A lot of that has to do with having the right tech stack, you know, some sort of project management software where everything happens out in the open and it's very clear who is doing what by when. That helps to remove that excuse. And then we get to the final one, which is more of a cultural thing, which is the, I don't want to. Now, that one can be challenging depending on where someone's at, but it's once you've removed the first two excuses, it becomes much easier to address the last because it's a management issue and you are here to do a certain job and we have expectations. And the other good thing to keep in mind is once you start recruiting and you've created this systems culture, it actually gets easier over time. It's all of the resistance and the pushback only happens from your existing team members. So we look at different strategies on how to deal with that. For example, we have, I talk about it in the book, it's the system for unfollowed systems. So what do you do when someone doesn't follow a process?
Yes, interesting.
And how do you escalate and how do you get to a point where you put a line in the sand, where you say, this is how we do things here. Either you're going to adapt to this culture or you're not. So at some point, lines in the sand will need to be drawn, but it's also not the job of the systems champion. The systems champion isn't an enforcer, or they're not the systems police.
Right.
They set all of the right foundations to then make it easier for the leadership team to step in and go, oh, well, we've told you how it's done. The expectation is clear. Okay, well, now it's more of a management thing.
Yeah, the systems champion should never be put in the position of having to enforce the systems, especially if they're a junior person, right? They don't have the authority to enforce them. And so that does become a cultural issue and a leadership issue and a management issue. So it does go back to the leadership, to the owner or the management of the team to enforce and create a culture of systems that people want to use.
Yes. You start to build momentum as well. This is not a journey that has an end destination. You don't go, I'm going to systemize for 3 months and then we'll be done.
Right.
This is a change in the way that the team works. It's we follow process. If something breaks, it's not the individual's fault. We look to the system first and we have a way of doing things which is captured. If you do this, this is how you create business owner freedom. This is how you start to uncouple from team member dependency, because now we can plug different team members in and we know, well, if the architect goes away and has a holiday over Christmas and projects need to keep moving forward, well, team members can do that. And then other team members can come back and you can hit the ground running after the holiday because you know, okay, well, things are done a certain way. So that's the type of business that we're looking to build.
Yeah. Is there a system for continuous improvement for the system?
Yeah. So the final stage in systemology is optimization. And that's where we start to look at re-engineering and also putting in some structures. Generally, it's about issue identification, as in over the course of a month, you're identifying where little issues regularly pop up, and then we address them at the root cause, the system level. And we say, well, where is the system that's affecting this? And then we go to work on it. So that then becomes a bit of a game because every problem in business is a systems problem. So if you don't have enough leads, well, you have some lead generation problems. You got to work on those systems. You know, if you're having trouble converting people, well, you go to work on your sales systems. You start to then work looking at your dashboard of what's not quite working and you're like, oh, I want to improve this number. Okay, well, what are the systems, the levers here that I can pull to get the result I'm after?
Yeah. I'm looking forward to reading the book, Systems Champion. Systemology is one of the books that sit on my night table that I review often and recommend often. Architects are always looking for answers on systemology or for systems, and I recommend the book, Systemology, every time that conversation comes up. So I'm looking forward to this next step. And I think this next step is really, the first part is really important, right? It teaches you how to actually build systems. But I love this, especially for our community of architect business owners, for how do you get it done, right? And no, it's not you. You should have somebody else do it. And yes, there's roles for you in the process as well. But to have a systems champion is relieving the burden of not having these systems in your firm. You no longer have an excuse, right? You can hire somebody who doesn't cost a lot of money, who will be enthusiastic about the role and want to create those systems for you. It's a great solution for a really difficult problem.
The last little bit of advice I'll leave with someone is something that Michael Gerber left with me, which I talk about the story in the original book. Michael Gerber wrote a book called The E-Myth and was a big inspiration for me.
Another book on the night table.
Yes. So I've had the good fortune of working with him on a lot of different projects. And when he reviewed the systemology book, he said, just one thing, Dave, be careful not to let the owner off the hook. He said, while they might not be the person who's doing the documentation,
yes,
they're the person who leads this. They need to show the team that, hey, this is how we do things here. I'm going to put time, money, and resources behind this because it's important. So it's just have to be careful. This is delegation, not abdication. And yes, you'll still be involved. There's a real fine line there because I want people to know, well,
yes,
there's certain parts. And I just had an interview with Michael that I published a couple of weeks ago. And I asked him the question. I said, you're the systems guy. Do you like or do documentation? And he said, no, that's, you know, not really my job. And I thought, oh, that, I mean, it gives the permission to the business owner to know that they don't need to be great at systems. They just need to find someone who's great at systems and let them do that job and work with them.
Yeah.
And be involved like an architect is. I mean, that's, you want to be the architect of your business.
Yeah.
And think about it in the same way. You're not out there building the buildings or building the bridge, but you're definitely involved in creating that blueprint, which, I mean, this is the blueprint of your business.
Yeah, for sure. And it comes down to leadership, right? You can hire a systems champion, but you still need to lead the process.
Yes.
All right. Before I ask you my final question, I want to know about you and the future of systemology. What's coming next for systemology and for the systems champion? Anything coming down the pike that we should be paying attention to?
I've become obsessed with AI. That's the biggest thing for me. The last couple of years, when ChatGPT came out, a huge part of my business died virtually overnight. I had a team of documenters that would work with our systemologists. The systemologists would meet with clients, record tasks getting done. They would send those recordings in. We would transcribe it, document it, and save it into our SOP software. And ChatGPT comes out within the 30 days, that whole chunk of my business died. So
yeah. It
gave me, at the time, I thought, wow, this is, you know, horrible. But I look back now and go, what a blessing, because it's got me to operate with a real sense of urgency, understanding that AI is coming. It'll affect every role, every industry, and it's moving at an incredible pace. So I'm moving to understand how to leverage this wave. And a little bit further down the line, maybe beyond architects, when we think about builders, I do a lot of work with some builders, and they're kind of moving a little bit slower because they're thinking, well, the robots aren't coming to do the plumbing or lay the bricks. So they feel a bit safe about it. But the reality is it's coming. Yes. And it's moving really, really quickly. So the best thing that you could do is act with a sense of urgency and embrace what it is that you're doing and understand AI and how and where it can benefit you, because then you can thrive with this as opposed to surviving or getting wiped out. Otherwise, I mean, the people that don't move, they'll be the next blockbuster. They'll be Kodak that failed to adapt. So that's probably the big thing for me. I'm constantly thinking about how and where does process fit into an AI world, and how does small business use this technology to get better results in shorter time?
Yeah. AI is a huge threat to the architecture profession, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. Architects need to embrace it, need to lead it, need to use it as the tool, leverage it to the best of their abilities, and be human, right? The human-to-human connection is going to become so much more important in the future, and AI is just going to be a tool for that human-to-human connection. Very important that we don't ignore it. All right. Final question. What's one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
Based on everything we've talked about, I'm going to say find a systems champion.
Pretty obvious answer.
The biggest call to action. And just get started. Don't put this off. Like, you know intuitively that this is a bridge that every business owner must pass. You need to get systems and processes if you want to build a business that works without you. There's no way to do it without it. So the sooner you start, the better.
His name is David Jennings. The website to learn all about systemology and the new book, Systems Champion, is systemology.com. So go there, check it out. Systems Champion is the new book. Simplify business processes, unlock team potential, and achieve true freedom. We will have a link to that on the show notes. David Jennings, thank you very much for creating that book, for creating Systemology, and for creating the new book. I know that architects are going to find value in it. And thanks for coming by here and talking all about it and sharing your knowledge at Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks, Mark. A pleasure.
If you liked this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a link to this episode with a friend. Either just click the share button or highlight the URL and send the link to this episode with a friend, because that's how Entree Architect has grown to serve thousands more architects just like you throughout the 10 plus years of Entree Architect, that's how we've grown, architect to architect. So I would love for you to share this episode and all the episodes with one friend every week. We'd love that. And thank you to our sponsors for this episode. We don't have an episode if there's no sponsors. So thank you to our sponsors. Links to those sponsors, which you should go visit and click, and all the resources that we discussed today for this specific episode, they are all available at entrearchitect.com/podcast. Every episode that we've recorded is there, entrearchitect.com/podcast. Go click the links to the sponsors and say hello. Entree Architect is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. You should go visit that at gablemedia.com. That is the next evolution of interactive media and resources for the AEC community. You can now earn continuing education credits for listening to select episodes of this podcast, Entree Architect Podcast. Yes, AIA CEUs for listening to a podcast. It's there, and many other podcasts are there as well. And you can listen to all of them and get credit. Learn more about our program, Gable Members Program, at the gablemedia.com/members website. That's gablemedia.com/members. And if you are a small firm architect, join us today at Entree Architect Network. That is the worldwide organization for small firm entrepreneur architects. If you own your own architecture firm, you are an entrepreneur architect. You are an Entree Architect. With weekly live group business coaching, yep, we have business coaching there, monthly live business training with AIA CEUs, 2 a month, so 24 AIA credits per year, including 12 of those are HSWs. We have them in the membership. Business resources, all the resources you need to run your business, special session webinars, mastermind groups, and a thriving community of small firm architects just like you. Hundreds of architects are there waiting for you to join. So we provide the support and encouragement you need to succeed as a small firm architect. I know that you haven't been trained as a business person when you launched your firm. That's what we do. Come learn how to run a business at Entree Architect Network. And today you can go join right now for free for 30 days at this link, entrearchitect.com/30days. We'll give you free 30 days for membership. Go check it out at entrearchitect.com/30days, and I will see you there. Thank you for listening to this episode of Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I want you to remember 3 words: love, learn, share. Have a great day. Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season 1, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.
Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.